Today, we are going to discuss some extremely controversial topics. And because this is going to go on YouTube, there are certain words I cannot say. So just to warn you, I will write down these words, but I will not say them. Because if I do say them, then I will get censored on YouTube. Today, we're going to look at how evil triumphs. Why is the world so evil? And there's going to be a lot of extremely disturbing topics we're going to discuss. But you're mature, and it's important that we discuss these topics in order to understand how the world works. So let's just start. And we will do a lot of speculation and theorizing in this class. So do not take this as gospel. Do not believe this is the truth. The entire point of this class is to help you develop the theories and the ideas to better understand the world. These are tools. Okay, this is not truth. These are tools. All right. So the first question I have for you is, what is happening in Israel? Right now, as you know, Israel is besieging, bombarding Gaza. You might have seen the videos on social media. It is disturbing. It is terrible. What is happening? The word that is happening, the word that we use for what is happening in Gaza is this word. You are not allowed to say this word on YouTube, but that is the intention. What I will argue, though, is that the truth is far more disturbing than this. What is really happening in Gaza is a ritual sacrifice. And this happens quite often in human history. If you go back and you look at the real history of humanity, this happens quite often. Some of the most famous examples are the Aztecs. We've dug up temples of the Aztecs, and inside the temples are thousands and thousands of human skulls. So before they went to war, they practiced human sacrifice. They would commit mass murder of their enemies in public. So the Aztecs were really famous for this. The Phoenicians, specifically the Carthaginians, we will discuss them later this semester, but the Phoenicians were also famous for a particular type of sacrifice, which is child sacrifice. The Romans wrote histories insulting the Phoenicians for practicing this sort of sacrifice. But the Romans themselves practiced human sacrifice. What they would do is that after every major war, they would capture all the major leaders, all their enemies, and they would parade their enemies through the streets of Rome. This is something called the triumph. At the end of the triumph, they would gather enemies at the temple of Jupiter. Jupiter is their god. And then they would strangle to death their enemies. That's sacrifice, that's human sacrifice. They didn't call it that, okay? And they sort of disguised it, but we know for a fact that they did do this. So the question for us is, why is it that this happens? Why do the Aztecs do it? Why do the Phoenicians do it? Why do the Romans do it? And why is it today the Israelis do it in Gaza? And remember, okay, what the Israelis are doing is quite horrific because it is really this sort of sacrifice. Why? Because 47%, almost half of the population of Gaza is under 18 years old. So the majority of people who are getting killed are in fact children. What is most striking or blatant about what's happening in Gaza is that we can all see it for ourselves. And it's almost as though the Israelis want us to see it and want us to hate them. Right? You can see all over the world, popular opinion is turning against Israel. You have these popular protests all around the world. protesting what is happening in Palestine. If they really want to do this, right, there are actually much more effective ways of doing this. For example, you could just poison their water, or you could poison the ear so that everyone in Gaza gets a fast cancer, right? We have the technology to do this. So Israel could do it this secretly and no one would talk about it. And in 20 years' time, 30 years' time, the population of Gaza would all be gone. It would be a very secret, right? Instead, they choose to do this in front of the world. And my argument to you is that this is intentional. They want the world to hate them. Because by doing this, they create the ultimate taboo, right? We find this disgusting and contemptuous, so the entire world will unite against Israel. But guess what? That's what their religion wants. In the extreme form of Jewish eschatology or the religion, they believe that at the end of the world, Israel will fight the entire world and God will help Israel triumph in the end. So what's really happening in Gaza is that there are extremists within the Israel government who want to accelerate the process of the end of the world where Israel will face the world. And if you think about it, the entire idea of this ritual sacrifice is to unite the Israeli population. And what's extremely disturbing and horrifying about it is that this works. Why? Well, let's use an analogy, okay? The analogy is this. In Chinese history, the most popular military stratagem is to fight with a river behind your back. You guys have heard of this strategy, right? Where, okay, an army is losing, okay? It's being scattered by the enemy. So what the general does is forces the army to retreat to a river. And now with a river blocking your escape, you have a choice. You can either drown in the river or you can fight to the death. And most soldiers will choose to fight to the death. And so at this point, the soldiers are unified, they're galvanized, they're energized, and then they find a surge of energy to go and destroy their enemy. Okay, this is the most popular military stratagem in ancient Chinese history. And guess what? It's the same as Israel doing this right now in Gaza. It's the same logic. Yes, you have a question?
So what is the river for the Israel? Like,
that's a good question. What's the river right here, right? The river is a taboo, right? What's the worst thing you can do in modern society? Killing children, guys, right? So there's no exit for Israel. You either go all the way or the world comes and destroys you anyway. And in fact, what's really interesting is that if you go online, you will see Israelis go around the world and causing trouble everywhere. They're going to start fights. They shout death to the Arabs on public buses in the Western world. It's intentional. They want to unite themselves by dividing the world, by angering the world. Okay? Does that make sense? All right. So this is all very disturbing, and I want to slowly unpack, reveal to you how this works. Okay? So to do this, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use a thought experiment. The thought experiment is this. Let's just say that there's an island. We don't know where the island is, but it's an island. And there's no escape from the island. And on the island, the center, it's a hill, and it's safe. But everywhere else, you have these flesh-eating monkeys roaming everywhere. Okay, the problem is that on this island, the resources you need to survive, trees, food, and rivers, the monkeys are there. Okay, there's one safe spot in the center, but everywhere else, if you want resources, you have to go fight these monkeys. They're flesh-eating monkeys. They want to kill you. They want to eat you. And there's an infinite number of them. Now, let's just say that one day, for whatever reason, okay, we don't know why, but 100 men, aging, and they range from 15 to 65 years old, okay? They are mysteriously transplanted onto this island in a safe spot. They come from different countries. They do not speak the same language. They are of different ethnicities. They are all poor people in their countries. They don't have much education. So they're there, and they realize quickly that the situation is utterly hopeless. There's no escape from this island. These monkeys are everywhere, and they are tough warriors. And the situation looks bleak. They don't even speak the same language. They don't have a common culture. So at this point, you would imagine that they would feel hopeless and just lie down and die. But in reality, what happens is the opposite. What happens is that in this hopeless situation, they find a drive, a purpose, a spirit to fight for each other. And what will happen really quickly, okay, and this is really interesting, is the first thing that they will do is they will develop a common language. They don't speak the same language. Some speak Chinese, some speak English, some speak Spanish, some speak Russian, doesn't matter. They will very quickly develop a common language. And then what they will do is, with this common language, they will start to tell each other stories of where they come from. And then these stories will become a common myth, a founding myth of why they're here. And they come to believe that God has chosen them to save the world, and that's why they're here. Then what they will do is, with this new religion, they will start to develop rituals to reinforce this religion. These rituals include sex. Okay? So these men will have sex. And the reason why is create intimacy and bonding among them. And there'll be a lot of religious rituals as well. Another thing that they will do is pick a leader. There's 100 of them. They need a leader to organize them. And so we can imagine that during the leadership election, everyone gets up to speak. Now, the man who's 65, he is wise. He has experience. He has strategies. So he delivers a very powerful speech, inspiring everyone and telling people how they can survive against the flesh-eating monkeys. Okay, so he's really smart. Then suddenly you have a man up here who's 15 years old or 16 or 17, okay? He is not articulate. He has no ideas. What he does is this. He stands in front of everyone and he's bold and he's brave and he looks at everyone without saying a word. He shows them his hand, okay? He shows them his hand. Then from his pocket, he takes out a knife, okay? And then he cuts off his hand in front of everyone. And he does not cry. He just looks at everyone as though nothing happened. Let me ask you this question. Who does everyone pick to be their leader? The second person, obviously, right? The man who has shown sacrifice and commitment and devotion to everyone else. The old man has ideas and he will become the advisor to the leader, but the leader is the man who is most willing to die for everyone else. And so in this situation, the bravest among them will come and emerge as the leader. And as such, what will happen is that these people, these men, will become extremely inspired and devoted. Even though they are weak, they will learn to become strong. Even though they are poor and uneducated, they will learn to be wise and clever and strategic. They will radically transform themselves. And ultimately, what will happen is the idea of cohesion. Cohesion like brothers, cohesion like a family. They will understand each other, even though they're from different cultures, even though they have different backgrounds. They will understand each other better than they understand their own children and their own wives. And this cohesion will lead to something called synchronicity. Synchronicity. Synchronicity is when people act in unison together. Okay? So a very simple example of synchronicity is a sports team, right? When you watch a soccer match, how is that soccer team able to work together? Well, because of synchronicity, because their minds are alike. It's what we call a hive mind. And this allows for something called telepathy. They're able, literally, to think and act as one. So let me give an example of this. Let's just say one, they're sleeping, but one of them wanders off to collect wood. And then he's attacked by monkeys. It doesn't matter if he screams because he's too far away. Would his comrades know that he's in danger? They would. Okay, and the example here is, let's just say you're a mother and you have children, okay, and one of them goes off to France on a vacation. But then while he's in France, he gets hit by a car and he's hospitalized. Would you as a mother know that your son is in danger? Would you feel it? He hasn't called you, you don't know about this, but in your heart, would you know it? The answer is yes, you would know it. You would feel something is wrong. You would get on the phone and try to call your son. You can't reach your son, you would call the police, okay? You don't know what's happening, but something in your heart is telling you, I need to get in touch with my son. Okay, and that's how the hive mind works. That's how synchronicity works. Let's look at another example. Let's just say that one day, there's 10 of you and you're all collecting wood. And then suddenly you're attacked by 100 flesh-eating monkeys. There's a bridge that you've created, okay? It's a rope bridge. 9 get across the bridge, all right, but you're the last person, okay? And all the monkeys are about to descend on you. And you know that if the monkeys get across, your comrades are dead. So what do you do in this situation? Yeah, you cut the rope, okay? You die. You didn't think about it. You just kill yourself because what matters is not your life. What matters is the family. What matters is the team. And we know about this because in war, what often happens is in trench warfare, the enemy will throw a grenade into the trench, right? There's not enough time to pick up that grenade and throw it away. So what soldiers do is they will jump on the grenade and absorb the explosion, thus killing himself. It happens instantaneously. No one thinks about it. You just do it because what matters is saving your comrades. And this is what happens. Okay? Synchronicity develops where it's almost as though you're able to read each other's minds. And they keep on doing this for like 10, 20 years. And then suddenly, okay, let's continue a thought experiment. Suddenly, you are transported back to the real world as though nothing happened. But you have memories of what happened. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, you've experienced 20 years of hell on Monkey Island. You've dealt the capacity to work together. You have a hive mind. You're really energized. You're really inspired. You're really driven. You have a new religion all to yourself. Now, suddenly, you're all transported back to your real world, your old life. Okay? Now what would happen? Well, what would happen is that the 100 of you would want to come together again, right? And you would share your experience, your rituals, your religion with your children and your grandchildren. And quickly, over time, what will happen is that you guys will conquer the world. You will become the secret elite. The world is yours. There may be presidents, there may be famous people, but secretly, you're the ones who are in control. Your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren will inherit this legacy, and they are the ones who truly control power in the world. Does that make sense? All right. Yeah, question here.
If this person really transferred back to the reality, what if that time already have a leader that, like, you are just a peasant, but not a leader?
Okay, yeah, that's a good question. I've already told you this, okay? On the surface, there are leaders, but the real power are you guys, okay? And I'll explain why, all right? Now, what's also interesting is that while you're on this island, you will develop certain rituals that are very strange, but are important if you want to maintain unity, okay? So for example, one strange ritual is the funeral ritual. The funeral ritual. The idea here is that when someone sacrifices himself, you have a huge funeral to celebrate that person. And this may involve you cutting that person into different pieces and eating that person. Okay, but you will develop really strange rituals. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, so I'm gonna answer your question. Why are these guys in charge and not the real leaders of society? But first, I want to give you some historical analogies to this, okay? How do you know that what I'm saying is correct? Well, let's look at certain analogies of in history. All right. So, Sparta. Sparta is one of the most famous military societies in world history. Sparta is a city-state in ancient Greece. And you may have heard of Sparta. A movie about Sparta was made called 300. I'm not sure if you guys have seen the movie 300. But 300 is really about 300 Spartan soldiers who are fighting millions, not millions, but hundreds of thousands of Persian soldiers. Persia is invading mainland Greece. They fight at a place called Thermopylae, the Battle of Thermopylae. And this is the pass into mainland Greece. The Greeks have to hold this position if they are to prevent the invasion. Okay? 300 Spartan soldiers, backed by thousands of other Greek soldiers, make a last stand in this pass. They are overwhelmed by the Persian invasion, and rather than run, like most people, the 300 soldiers make a final stand. Their leader is Leonidas, and he tells them, "We will fight to the death." They all fight to the death, and they're all massacred. And the Persians take Leonidas' head, cut it off, and put it on a pike to warn the Greeks, "We are merciless." Eventually, the Greeks, inspired by the sacrifice of Leonidas, they will repel the invasion and destroy the invaders. So how do we get this culture? Okay, well, the education system of the Spartans is really interesting. It's really disturbing, actually. So young boys at age 5 and 6, they're taken away from their homes. And they are put in a school run by older boys. Okay, so the older boys are maybe like 10, 11. And so what happens, as you can imagine, is the older boys beat the crap out of the younger boys, okay? From day one, there's no education. They're not learning anything. All that's happening is the older boys are just beating the crap out of the younger boys. But because this is happening, we call this like hazing, okay? And this happens actually a lot among fraternities and sports teams. When they're getting the crap beaten out of them, it builds solidarity. It builds brotherhood. So these young boys who are 5 and 6, they learn to love each other, because only by helping each other can they survive the brutality. Okay? Then what happens is when they become 11, 12, 13, when they hit puberty, this is really interesting, they become mentored, okay? Mentored by an older soldier, an older Spartan soldier who's maybe 28, 29, 30, but he has a family. They become lovers. They have sex with each other. And this builds group solidarity. Okay, so during hazing phase, these young boys learn to trust each other. They learn how to bond with each other. During the mentorship phase, these young boys learn to think like in a hive mind, okay? They learn to be part of a larger group. Then when they turn 18, they graduate, okay? And in order to graduate, what they do is this. They have a mission. So the Spartans have slaves called helots, okay? These are just people that they've conquered and who are now work as slaves in the fields for them, okay? They're like serfs. So there are lots of rules governing the helots. An important rule is curfew. So if it's dark at night, you cannot be outside the house. If you are outside the house at night, you could be executed, okay? So as a graduation mission, these young soldiers hide in the fields at night. Okay? They hide in the fields and they wait for the sun to go down. So it's now dark. And they look for helots to come back because they're late. And what they'll do is they'll sneak up behind the helots and cut their throats. Okay? This is basically sacrifice. Okay? Human sacrifice. So the Spartans did this as well. It's a very common thing. And what this does is it builds group cohesion, leading to synchronicity. Only, there are thousands and thousands of city-states in Greece. Only Sparta did this. And it made everyone think Sparta was disgusting. Everyone hated Sparta. But it kept Sparta unified. And it made Sparta into the dominant military power in Greece at that time. Okay? What happened then is Thebes, another city-state in Greece, they would copy the Spartan system, okay? But they made it voluntary. So in Sparta, you had to be an elite to be part of the system. But in Thebes, anyone could join the system, okay? And they call the system the sacred band. Of 300 soldiers. And they were, again, lovers, okay? But this is really important for you guys to understand. At this time in history, there's no concept of homosexuality. It was perfectly permissible. No one cared if you had sex with men or animals or whatever, okay? It was not a big deal. This comes much later in modern times. Back then, homosexuality was not considered a concept. Okay, if you're out in the field, if you're out at war for like years and years and there's no woman around, you're gonna have sex with other men. It's a very natural thing to do. Okay, it doesn't mean you're homosexual, okay? So the sacred band of Thebes became the dominant military power after Sparta, okay? It's called the sacred band. And they were like the vanguard, they were the spearhead. They would be the first in battle. And they were so ferocious that their enemies would run away. Okay? Then what happened is that Macedonia would copy the Theban system. Who's the most famous Macedonian in the world? Do you guys know? Which Macedonian is the most famous ever in human history? You know the name, but you may not know he's Macedonian. Alexander the Great, okay? His father is Philip II. Philip II is the one that actually built the greatest army in the world, the Macedonian army. And it was Alexander the Great, his son, who would take this army and conquer Persia. Okay, we'll learn this later on. But Philip II learned all this from Thebes. And at first, Macedonia and Thebes were allies, but Philip II was very ambitious. So then he wanted to conquer all of mainland Greece. And in 338 BCE, at the Battle of Trachonia, Macedonia fought against the combined might of Thebes and Athens. And Macedonia destroyed Thebes and Athens, okay? Because Macedonia basically copied the system from Sparta and Thebes. At this point, Macedonia should have destroyed the entire Theban and Athenian army. But when all was lost, the sacred band, they stood in the middle of the field. And they block the advance of Macedonian charge. so that everyone could escape back into the cities. They did not fear death. They welcomed death. Okay? For them, what mattered was honor and sacrifice. And that's how you create the greatest army in the world. Okay? Does that make sense? So these historical analogies give credence to our thought experiment. Okay, now we're going to look at a question, which is, okay, why does the system work? Okay, so let's do game theory. Game theory. Game theory is just a study of how to win games, okay? It's a very general thing. So let's do a thought experiment and just say there's about 1 million people in the world, okay? There's 1 million people in the world, and they're all trying to win the game against each other, but only one can win. Well, according to game theory, the best way to win a game is by, does anyone know? Cheating, okay? Cheating. If you follow the rules, you will never win the game, you have to cheat. And in this game, the best way to win is by coordinating with other people, right? Because everyone's playing by himself. So if you can work with other people, then that gives you a huge advantage over everyone else, right? The problem with this is the moment that people start coordinating, it forces an arms race of coordination. So maybe these two are working together. These four now are forced to work together, which now forces these five to work together. Okay? So, if you are the first to work together, you get screwed in the process. So, if you cheat, you have to cheat secretly. Okay? You have to coordinate without people knowing you're actually coordinating together. You have to conspire secretly. Okay? And there are different ways to collaborate secretly. Okay? So, let's look at examples. So, family is one example, right? Of coordination, synchronicity. Another example is religion. If you have a leader, right? If you have a similar race, ethnicity, and you have a similar language. Okay, so these are examples of how you get people to coordinate together. The problem is that these are all obvious to people, which forces them to do the same thing, okay? But there's a strategy that you can use that allows you to coordinate secretly and defeat all your enemies. And this strategy is called transgression. Transgression, the breaking of taboos, the breaking of social norms, the breaking of social laws. Transgression. Okay, so let's study this concept. All right, so the idea is that, the theory is that the greater you transgress, okay, this is the level of transgression, the greater your cohesion, which leads to synchronicity. Okay, that's a theory I want to propose to you. All right? So, transgression, I mean, it's a very simple idea. You're breaking the rules, right? You're cheating. And therefore, everyone wants to put you in prison. Which means that the only way that you can survive is if you keep the secret among your group, right? Which forces cohesion. Does that make sense? All right? And we see this in all aspects of society. Right? So the most basic form of transgression is just joking or pranking, right? So for example, you guys, six of you, decide, you know what? We're going to play a joke on the school. We're going to cover all the rooms with toilet paper. It's a joke. It's a prank. But obviously, you don't want to get caught because the school will punish you. And this joke and this prank will make you more cohesive, right? Because now you have a secret amongst yourself. And if anyone betrays you, you're all screwed. right? Does that make sense? That's a logic. The other thing that's really interesting is that when you transgress, when you break a taboo, you feel empowered. You feel liberated. And it becomes addictive. Right? You fill the school with toilet paper. You're like, that was a lot of fun. Why was it fun? Because you broke the rules. You feel I'm more powerful than my teacher. Then, so you keep on doing more and more of this stuff, right? Then you may be like, hey, let's go to the store and steal a candy. That candy may cost $1, nothing, right? But you try it and you are terrified. You're seized by doubt. You're seized by fear. Sorry, so this is the sound that tells us that we should go on break, but again, we don't go on break in this class, okay? So I apologize. We're not taking a break. We keep on going, okay? But that's what the sound is. Okay, so you're terrified because your mother, your teachers, everyone told you stealing is bad, right? But when you actually go and do it, how do you feel? You feel energized. You feel liberated. You feel empowered. And if your friends are with you, how the friendship becomes much more unified, much more cohesive, much more synchronized. Does that make sense? And now you want to learn, let's break more rules. Let's see what happens if we break more and more rules. And you keep on going because it's addictive. And ultimately, there's a transgression that is the ultimate taboo, which is what? You guys know? Yeah, right? This. Right? Can you think of a more worse transgression than this? That's why they do it. Because it feels empowering. It releases energy. They do it because they believe that when you do this, it releases divine energy. And when you actually do it, okay? I'm not telling you to go do this, okay? Please do not do this. Okay? And please remember, okay? This is evil. We should not be doing this. But when you actually go and do it, those who can do it, they feel as though they are now inundated, that now they are now filled with divine energy. They found the secret of the universe. They found the ultimate power in the world. Another transgression, which is not as bad, but pretty bad, is the idea of incest, right? And there are secret societies out there, guys, that do this. And you know what, guys? I hate to tell you this, okay? But they do it in public in front of everyone else because that creates both group unity, synchronicity, and it releases in their minds divine energy. They have now access to God. If you want to know what secret societies do, well, yeah. This and this, okay? And again, this is only a small group of people. But now we know why these people control the world. Because they're able to keep secrets. Because they're more motivated than everyone else. And they're able to work together in a way that allows them to achieve ultimate power. These leaders you see, right? These leaders you see, they are puppets. They are just the face. The real power are the secret societies that practice these rituals. And again, I'm not saying this is the truth. I'm just saying this is a possible theory about how the world works, right? Because this is a class of speculation. It's a class of theory. Don't think this is the truth, okay? But you can think about how this works and ask yourself, does it explain the world? Okay? All right. So having explained this, what I want to do now is go into the deep theory as to why this is happening. Okay, so if you talk to these people and they're honest with you, they'll tell you that when we do this, we access God and God gives us divine power because they're superstitious and they're stupid. Okay, just because they're the elite, just because they're powerful people does not mean they're clever. In fact, they're kind of stupid if you actually meet them. Right? But I'm going to explain how this system works. And when I explain it to you, it will make sense. Okay, but are we clear so far about what's happening, guys? All right? I know this is disturbing, and I know I'll probably get banned on YouTube for this, but it's important that we do this, okay? All right, so now I'll explain the theory as to why this is happening. How is it transgression is able to unleash divine energy? Okay, so Kant. We will look at some major thinkers, and they're really deep thinkers, and we'll go more into them this semester, but I'm gonna introduce them, okay? So Kant. Remember from the first class, Kant had a theory of how the world works. There is no objective reality that we see, okay? So before, the assumption was that we just absorb reality, okay? But Kant says that we are active, sorry, we'll wait for this. So Kant says that we are active participants in reality. How? Well, because our brains are filters. We add space and time to reality. Space and time does not exist outside of us, okay? So the objective reality is called noumena, okay? The things in themselves. Do not worry about these names, but this is the objective reality. What happens is that for our filters, we interact with the noumena, and that creates something called the phenomena, the things that we see, the phenomena, okay? And that's the world we know. The noumena we can never ever know. That's the theory of Kant, okay? And this has been confirmed by neuroscience. So this is basically the most accurate model of the world that we have. The problem though is that Kant's conception of the world creates three questions, okay? The first question is, what is the noumena? Kant says we can never know it, but we still want to know it, okay? That's the first question. Second question then is, who gave us these filters, right? Where do our filters come from? How do our minds work, and who created our minds in the first place? That's the second question. The third question is, if we are all seeing the world through our own lens, how do we know that we're seeing the same world? How do our perception of the world align together? Okay? So Kant creates these problems. Hegel, who comes after Kant, Friedrich Hegel, by the way, he proposes a solution to this, to these three problems. And what he says is this, and this is really important for us to understand, is the noumena is the Geist. The Geist is hard to translate. We usually translate it to mean spirit. Okay, so what Hegel is saying is that the spirit world is what creates the material world. We are just a shell. What really matters is the spirit world. Now, it's really important to understand the concept of the Geist, okay? And again, it's German, but there's no actual English translation for it. So it's best to see Geist as a combination of three words that derive from Geist. Okay, these three words are Ghost, Geyser, and Gist, okay? So these three English words are derivatives of the German word Geist, right? Most words in English are actually German in origin. Sorry, not most words, but many words, okay? All right. Ghost is just a parallel reality that exists alongside us, right? A spiritual world. That's the first concept. Geyser is just a force that is exploding or becoming or expanding. So this Geist is constantly expanding and becoming. Gist means the essence of things, the core of things. Okay? So the real truth in the world is the Geist. Not what we see, but what is invisible to us. Okay, so that's the idea of the Geist. Does that make sense? Now with the Geist, we can answer all three questions. The noumena, the real world, is the spiritual world, not the material world. It's the Geist that gives us these filters. And because we're all seeing the world through the Geist, we see the same world. Okay? So now this creates another problem, which is, where did the Geist come from? What is the Geist? Okay, and here we will look at Plato and Dante. Okay, so again, this is a really deep theory, and we'll go more deeply into this as the semester moves. But I just first want to introduce the idea to you right now, okay? So this comes from Plato and a religion called Gnosticism. Okay, the Gnostics. Gnostic just means knowledge. Okay, so in the beginning, the Big Bang, the force is the monad, or the one. Okay, there are different names for this thing, or nous. Just think of this as a supreme god, okay? The Big Bang, the force, like the sun almost, okay? The spiritual sun of the universe. The nous works by breathing. When he breathes, he vibrates his divine power. And through this, he creates new beings called dyads. Dyads are just peers of forces, okay? And these dyads then create different realities, all right? So different realities are being created through this interaction. And eventually, you reach Earth, okay? So in other words, what Plato and Gnostics are telling us is that the Geist is a multi-layer, multi-dimensional world that we access all the time. Okay? Does that make sense? And the Earth, what we see, it is just the most outer shell in this universe. Is this clear to you guys? All right. So now the question then is, what is the purpose of life in the world? And what Plato says is that the purpose of life in this world is to return to the monad. Okay, and guess what, guys? This is actually the framework for a lot of religions, including Hinduism, right, and Buddhism. This is what the Hindus and the Buddhists believe as well. Nirvana is to return to the monad. I'm not sure if you guys have studied religion before, okay? But that's the idea. So what Plato says is that through the pursuit of knowledge, philosophy, the love of knowledge, you can return to the monad, okay? Dante, and we will study Dante in depth later on, okay? But Dante has another solution. What Dante says is that the monad is love, okay? And the monad, because he creates things, his divine spark emanates throughout the universe, okay? So there is a divine spark in us, and this divine spark is called love. So we are able to love people. Mothers love children, you love each other, because of this divine spark in you. And the more you love, the more you return to the monad. Okay, so Plato says, pursue knowledge. Dante says, pursue love. Okay? So now the question is, okay, this sounds all very good, but why does evil happen in the world? Okay, what's the source of evil? Right? That's interesting. Okay, you have this theory of the universe, but then the question then is, why do people do bad things then? Why is there sacrifice in the world? Why are people doing all these bad things and not only getting away with it, but they're also controlling the world? That's a big question, right? So, for Plato, the answer is very simple. This world doesn't matter. Who cares if they control this world? It's a fake shadow world. Ignore them. Just focus on the pursuit of knowledge because that allows you to be one with the monad. Okay? Who cares about this world? Give them what they want. Give them their power, their fame, their money. Who cares? Dante's answer is actually very interesting. Okay? That's Plato's answer. It doesn't matter. This world doesn't matter. Who cares what happens in this world? It's a prison anyway. Dante actually proposed something different. He says this. If the monad is love, love is trust. So the monad loves us, and as a result, the monad gives us free will. Now, free will can lead to bad things, for example, this world, but he has no choice in the matter. Because for him to interfere means to take away our free will. And free will is his greatest gift to us. Okay? But now and then, what he will do is he will send messengers to our world to remind us that there is a divine spark in us and we can activate it and achieve a greater consciousness. And these messengers are Plato, Dante, right? Jesus, right? Does it make sense? So now and then the monad will send through the Geist, okay? The monad will implant ideas in these people who will then tell us the truth. But it's our choice whether or not to believe it because the monad has given us free will. All right, so for Plato, what's important is the pursuit of knowledge. For Dante, what matters is the pursuit of love, to love each other unconditionally, okay? And that's what they tell us. What the system also tells us is that the powerful want to deny the system, right? Because if they control Earth, the fake world, they want to make it as real as possible. Does that make sense? That's the source of their power. The belief that the only thing that matters is the material world, the prison that we live in. And that's why we have science, right? Science is negation of the spiritual world and the validation of the material world. If you cannot see it, it must be fake, right? Okay? So that's how power works. Now, transgression works in this model because transgression allows the powerful to align to a certain part of this universe, okay? Because in this universe, there are evil forces as well. Does that make sense? So for example, the metaphor is, think of the internet, right? Well, there are millions and millions of websites. And through transgression, by doing the same evil act, what the powerful have done is they've locked onto the same website, right? And because they've locked on the same website, it allows for synchronicity. It allows for them to commit, to think alike and to behave the same way. Okay? All right, so that's the general theory. And again, this is all speculation. I'm not telling you this is true, but I'm giving you a framework to work with to better understand why things happen. We're just speculating. We're using our imagination here, right? I know this is a lot, but Kant, Plato, Hegel, Dante, we will go much more deeper into over the semester. I just introduced these ideas now. Okay, questions, guys? Okay, you had a question from last class, right? Uh-huh. Right, so can you ask a question from last class and I'll answer it first?
All right, from last class, you mentioned that the ones that control society are those old pensioners, right? Because they get revenues from the youngers and they control the society. In our society, I do see signs or phenomena that the government are sort of helping the old pensioners by creating more, say, entertainment or facilities that benefit them. So why is that? Is it possible that the government also benefits from old pensioners' actions, or is actually the governments are controlled by old pensioners?
Yeah, I mean, we discussed this last class, but it's the pensioners, the old people who control society, control the culture, who control government, right? Because in China, from the first day, you're taught to respect your elders, right? You're taught that elderly people are worth emulating, they're worth studying from. They're what's most precious about a society. So it makes sense that the government would create policies to most benefit the elderly. Okay, that's just the structure of Chinese society. Respect for the elderly. Okay, thank you. Any more questions, guys? Yep. Ember has a question.
Sure. So I was just thinking about the model, and I think
the
it's
monad.
Model that we have on the board. So like you said, the existence of evil is, if you don't mind repeating yourself.
Oh yeah. So what is evil?
Yeah.
Okay. In this system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in this system, what is evil is the denial of the system. Okay. So because the monad is the truth, it's love, right? So the closer you move to the monad, that's what's good. The further you move away from the monad, that's what's evil, right? So at the very end of this model is Earth. So the more you embrace the material world, the more you deny the spiritual world, that's what's evil in this model.
Okay.
So for Plato, what's good is the pursuit of knowledge. And what's evil is the pursuit, the denial of knowledge, which includes, by the way, art, right? Movies. Because movies are just a shadow of the shadow world. The world we live in is fake, and movies, all they do is depict this fake world, then it makes things worse. Mm-hmm. Okay? And Dante, whatever allows for more love is good, what allows for less love is bad.
Okay? So just to add on to that, so what if, like we mentioned earlier, sacrifice can be considered as a way to unite people. It creates cohesion.
Yeah.
And with cohesion,
it unlocks divine energy because you're accessing a part of this model.
Okay.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right?
So,
and that's why, uh-huh. as you're doing this sacrifice, they are worshiping a certain god. Uh-huh. Right? So sacrifice is part of their religion. It's not done independently. They have a religious framework for the sacrifice, and that's why they do it. Right? They don't do sacrifice for a personal sacrifice. They do sacrifice as a consummation of their religion, because that's what their religion demands of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And because so they're worshiping a god, they're sacrificing these people to send to this god.
Okay.
Right? So they're accessing a part of this model, which is a lower part, okay?
Mm.
And there are evil beings in this model as well, right? But they go lower.
So by being evil or like doing the bad deeds, we get, as long as it creates love in Dante's theory, gets us ultimately closer to the
monad. The monad, yes.
But the evil now that we perceive is constructed by our current society. So,
yeah. So what Dante is saying about our current society is that our society is first and foremost anti-love. It does not allow for people to love each other. So, for example, school, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, without school, your parents would just care about your happiness. But because of school, parents care about your grades and whether or not you get into a elite American college,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not you get a good job. And so the parents deny your free will. They deny your agency. And as a result, you don't feel loved. Okay? So that's what Donnie would argue. Our society is anti-love because the society is constructed in a way that does not allow for normal human relationships to flourish.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In a normal relationship, your parents would just let you do whatever you want. I would think, you know? But because they're like, no. If I let you do whatever you want, you will not do well in school, and you won't be able to get a job, and then you become I don't know, unemployed and a drug addict. Who knows, okay? Right? That's how they think. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So the denial of free will is anti-love, and therefore it's evil, and it limits you from getting closer to monad.
That's right.
Okay, great.
Exactly. Thank you. Yep.
Just like what Amber mentions, that this world is anti-love, but what is the purpose of like not letting us get closer to the monad?
Well, that's a good question, right? Why are they doing this? Because the people in power want to stay in power, right? Because what they're doing, it goes against the monad. But they want to stay in power.
So they gain like benefits such as power by disobeying the monad and letting others like disobeying the monad because they can keep their power.
Okay, so let us be very clear, okay? This is really important. Different people will interpret this model in a different way, okay? In their conception, the monad's the evil one. Their God's the good one. They're liberating us from the monad by making us more focused on the material world. Okay, does that make sense? But the reality is that they were able to get their power because they had a religion that promoted transgression, which allowed them to coordinate well together. And now that they have this power, they need to rationalize why they have this power, and they need to develop systems to maintain this power. And that's why we have the world we live in today. Does that make sense? Okay? Does that make sense? They're powerful, they want to maintain the power, so they will think of new ideas that allow them to keep this power, even if it means denying the truth, okay? And again, guys, this is a theory. No one knows if this is true or not. I don't know. Okay.
But like what you just mentioned, that nomad has two meanings to either...
No. The nomad does not have two meanings. It has one. It has different names, but one meaning. Okay, this is really important for you to understand.
But
there are different names for this, but it is the sun, okay? The divine sun, the source of all life.
So Plato defines nomad as knowledge, and Dante defines nomad as love.
No. Okay, listen, okay? You have to get this straight, okay? This is everything, okay? Love, knowledge, everything, okay? The question that Plato and Dante are debating is, how do you return to the monad? Okay, so for Plato, it's the pursuit of knowledge that allows you to get closer to the monad. For Dante, it's the pursuit of love. Okay, but this is the one and all, the infinite and the eternal. What Plato would say is that this is the perfect. This is the immutable. It will never change. And it's the eternal. It's always been there and it will always be there. Okay?
It's really similar to Buddhism.
It is exactly Buddhism. Yes.
Aspect of the world and like the ultimate end of things. It's more like abstract concept. It's not something physical that we can interpret as one thing or another.
Yes, this is exactly Buddhism and Hinduism, okay? So this is really interesting how different religious traditions working in different localities have the same conception of the world, of the universe. And can we give someone else an opportunity to speak, please? Okay. Can someone else ask question? Like I know you're enthusiastic, but sometimes you want to step back and absorb the idea. Okay. So you've asked a lot of questions, but go home, think about this some more. Okay. Does that make sense? Okay. Does anyone else want to ask questions? Okay. One more question. Okay. One.
Just to confirm that.
Okay.
Plato and Dante just like gives us the way to approach nomad, right?
Okay. Can you ask the question again? I don't.
Like, I want to confirm that Plato or Dante, Plato said that to learn knowledge, and Dante said to pursue love. So they gives the way to let us approach monad, right?
So the monad in the conception of everything is the same. Okay? It is a source of everything. Plato and Dante are proposing different ways to come closer to the monad, right? For Plato, it's like spend your entire life learning mathematics, specifically geometry, because he thinks that geometry is really the language of the universe, the secret language of the universe. Dante says, that's too hard, guys. That's not intuitive. Like, for Plato's an elitist, right? Plato is like, only if you come to my school and you learn geometry, sacred geometry, will you access heaven. Dante's like, that makes no sense. The monad would not create a system which only the elite, the chosen, could access him. The monad, if he truly loves everyone, will give everyone the capacity to reach him. And that capacity that is accessible to everyone is love, right? Doesn't matter who you are, you can all love. But quite honestly, there are not that many people in the world who can do calculus, right? Right? So Plato's like, you have to do calculus. Plato's like, and Dante's like, that's just ridiculous. That's the most ridiculous thing in the world. Okay? Does that make sense now? Okay. Any more questions, guys?
Like, why is that, like, a lot of other, like, religions and, you know, Plato or, like, Dante, they came to the same realization of monad? Like, why is that? Like, it's from different places in the world, different regions, but, like, why do they all have kind of the same thing about wisdom or, like, knowledge in general?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. And the answer is the Geist, right? The answer is, where do our thoughts come from and where do our thoughts go? Do you really think that it's our brain that produces thoughts? Why is it that with the same brain, right? Same neurological structure, but we have different ideas. And why is it that I have so many ideas and you and others have limited ideas? Well, like biologically, we cannot explain it, okay? We've never explained it. So if you study neuroscience, one thing that we'll never ever ask is, where do our thoughts come from? Which is weird because that should be the most basic question, right? That's the first question you ask. But they never ask that. Why? Because they cannot answer it. And the answer, the possibility is the Geist exists. And our ideas come from the Geist. And when we think of ideas, it goes back into the Geist. Right? It's a ghost. It is with us and is not with us.
There's just like a big system out there that everything comes from there. So all of the things will go back there eventually.
Exactly. And that's how we can explain why all these different religions have the same conception of the universe. Because they're getting this conception through inspiration, right? Through communication with the Geist. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. I think that makes a lot more sense than, oh, the synapses in our brains, you know? They fire together and they hit and like, ooh, we have an idea. I don't know. Okay, all right, so great. We will continue this next class, okay?